I'm John Gill, and welcome to this month's edition of Fraud Talk, the ACFE's podcast. My guest today is Evie Pompouris. Evie is one of the instructors for our Principles of Fraud Examination class, and she's actually just gotten through a session on obtaining confessions and doing signed statements. And so I asked her if she would mind coming over to the ACFE headquarters and talking to me a little bit about some tips on how to work with someone to get them more amenable to possibly confessing and kind of telling you exactly what they went on. Even though when you first sit down, that's usually not the mood that the person's in. They're usually sitting there thinking, okay, how much do they know? Is there a way that I can kind of just fake my way through this? So, Evie, what are some of your experiences in, you know, like when you first sit down with somebody, what do you think is mostly going through their mind?
They're trying to feel you out, and they're also assessing you. They think the interviewer is just assessing the interviewee, but they don't stop to take a moment that that person that's sitting in that chair is sizing you up as well. So you should take a moment and think, are you presentable? What are you presenting when you walk into the room? Is your shirt wrinkled? Are your shoes not shined? And these sound like silly little things, but you're exuding an image, and that image is either I'm well put together, and that translates to that person, you know what, this person's a serious person, they're a professional. But if you're disheveled, if your hair's unruly, if your shirt's untucked, if you're wrinkled, if your shoes aren't shined, then that person perceives that as a sign of weakness, and you're already starting behind the eight ball. So I think that's the first thing you wanna work on. And think of it this way, if you saw you walk into the room, what impression would you get? And that kind of sets the tone of where you're gonna go from there.
Well, let's say you polish your shoes and you're looking nice and you sit down with them. What's the first thing that you're gonna do next?
When you walk into the interview room, you wanna be engaging with the person, whether you like the person or not, whether you like what they've done or not, your personal biases, you know, your opinions, those need to be checked out the door. And you need to understand that it's not about you, it's about that person. So when you walk in, hello, my name is Evie, it's nice to meet you. You know, you can state your title if you need to, but if you're not required to, I would avoid those types of formalities. You don't really want to tell them, hello, I'm a fraud investigator. That's going to kind of set that person, set the tone that, wow, this is serious, because that has a serious connotation to it. So if you can avoid that, do that. And you want to make it informal. Hi, nice to meet you. Thank you for coming in to see me. Have a seat. Have a seat here. And that's another thing, another way to exude authority in the room is for you to tell that person what to do. And one of the simplest ways you can do that is, like, don't let that person sit where they want, show them where to sit. And when you do these little things, it shows them that you have authority in the room and you're setting the tone of who's in charge without you having to tell them or remind them, I'm in charge here.
Now, some of the introductory questions that you're asking, what are the purposes of maybe asking them where they're from or how long they worked here? What are those questions set up?
Two things. One, it helps you get data and information on that person, because a lot of people may use different names, different social security numbers. You want to get as much information as you can, get an address, you know, get family members, maybe you can ask them about their family, where they're from, so you can build information around this person. Because often people, especially repeat offenders, they've got different backgrounds, different people, different social security numbers, different names. So on one sense, you're able to authenticate and get all the information you need to know who you're speaking to and to build a case. And on the other sense, as far as the interviewing portion goes, it helps you find out what the norm is of the person. So what does that mean when we talk about norm? It means I want to see who you are normally. I want to see you relaxed. I want to see how you interact with others. I want to see how you speak, what you say, what you don't say, your gestures. So I want to see you in that capacity, because later on in the interview, when I start asking you these uncomfortable questions and it starts to get stressful, then I can see that clear shift in your behavior, because that's what happens. Think of it this way. You're comparing the unstressed out person, the unthreatened person, they're not stressed, and you're taking that and you're comparing them to when they're stressed out, when they're intense, when they're feeling those questions, when the heat is on. So you're comparing those two individuals. And if you see a drastic difference in that, then a lot of that will show you the key indicators you need to look for deception. So for example, if somebody is sitting in the room and throughout the whole interview, they're always scratching their head, but they've been doing it from the beginning, then that just means that's a personal tick that person has regardless. But if they're not doing it at all, and then you start later as you go into the interview and you ask those questions, you know, did you take that money? And then they start scratching their head, that's a sign. That's an indication that they're stressed out and they're behaving and they're showing you those indications of deception. So that's what helps you.
Let's say you get into a sensitive area and you're thinking, okay, they're definitely exhibiting some signs of stress, but they're adamant that I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have any knowledge of that. I wasn't there. What are some tools to try and break down those barriers?
The big thing is this, it's confidence. You have to have confidence in the room and confidence in what you're doing. If the person across from you senses that you're not confident, you're done. Game over. So even if you're not, just don't show it. You have to have a good poker face. Think about those people you watch on TV when they're playing poker. They've got the glasses on and the hats on. You can't see what's going on because they're hiding the visuals that their face could give away. It's the same thing with you. Don't give it away. So if you don't know, you know, go in it as if you do know. Let that person think you know what you're doing, because the moment they think that you don't have it together, that you're missing something, or that they think that they can change you or change your mind, it puts you way behind. And that's the key thing. And then as far as approaching them with the things you can say, you know, they're going to give you denials. They're going to say certain things, I don't know. You need to press people. A lot of times people feel uncomfortable doing interviews because there's a sense of confrontation, there's a sense of calling people out, and people don't like to be called out, they don't like to call other people out, and they don't like confrontation. If you don't like confrontation, or let me correct it, if you're not comfortable with confrontation, then you're gonna have a difficult time speaking with people, because people will get confrontational with you. They'll say to you, why are you accusing me of this? I told you I didn't do this. They're gonna get in your face. It's quite possible they will. And they're going to try to fight because they don't want to go to jail. They don't want to get fired. They don't want to be labeled as a thief. So yes, you're going to have to work for that.
How important is it to kind of check your personal bias at the door? For instance, they think that you're judgmental. How is that going to affect the interview process?
Yeah, that's like the kiss of death for an interviewer. If somebody thinks you're judging them, then you might as well just leave the room. That's not what that's about. The interview is not about you. It's not about you making the other person feel bad for what they did or judging what they did. You have to understand, you are there as a professional. You are there to collect information. You are there to elicit information. Then you are to take that information and give it to the people and allow the judge and jury, let those people pass judgment, not you. But your job is to collect, and you cannot collect information from people when they feel that you're judging them. Who likes to be judged? Nobody, no matter what you've done. Who likes to have their faults shoved in their face? No. But if you do that in the interview room, you know what you're telling that person? Don't talk to me. And they won't. They're either going to start filtering what they're saying, or they're just going to shut down. They're going to not tell you anything. So it's not about you. It's not about the interviewer. You are the professional. You check your biases and ego out the door. It's not about pride. Somebody may even get in your face. They may even insult you during the interview. Again, you command respect and authority through your behavior. And you can check people when you need to, so you can kind of keep that ambiance in place of who's in charge of the room or not. But you're not there to take things personally. None of it is personal. This person's going to speak to you the same way they would speak to anybody else sitting across from them, because they just don't want to go to jail. They don't want to lose their job. So don't take things personally. If you're taking it personal, then you don't belong in that room.
Let's say you get the first admission that they admit, well, I did take some money. It just kind of happened. I didn't really plan this out in advance. Once you get that first admission, how do you proceed from there? What other types of information do you want to elicit at this point?
So once somebody just kind of they show you that you're able to crack their armor, so to speak, and then they leak it out. Look, you know, I didn't plan this. It kind of happened. Be like, that's okay. This is good. Tell me about that. Tell me about what happened. And that's it. Leave it. Let them speak. Don't hit with those questions yet, because now you've just kind of cracked their armor and they're starting to speak. Don't say anything because you may shut them down. You're still kind of like in sensitive waters here. The key is to get them comfortable enough to keep going. So be like, tell me about that. That's okay. Okay. And then it's never a big deal. No matter what they confess to, no matter how bad it sounds, it's never a big deal to you. You don't ever make it seem like it's a big deal. And that's how you would go about it. You let them speak, you let them share their story, and then later on, then you come in with those follow-up questions. Well, how about this? You know, well, how much money would you say? Okay, you know, is there anything left of some of the money that you took? Do you know of any other people involved? You know, what else can you tell me? What about this individual? And that's when you follow up with these questions. But if you notice, my questions are always very neutral, right? I don't want to make it seem that I'm very, very interested, but I also don't want to seem too relaxed. I'm in the middle.
You get them to give you some of this information, and you want to get a written record for the file. And so the next thing you do is like, well, how do you mention and approach the aspect of getting a signed statement from them?
Yeah, so this is interesting, because this is where everybody kind of gets worried. How do I get this person to write this down? How do I approach it? You approach it the way you've been approaching everything throughout the whole interview. It's not a big deal. Nothing is ever a big deal. Okay, well, this is great. We're just going to put this down on paper just to make sure that I have everything accurately, that there's no misunderstandings and nobody's thinking you took $1 million when it was only, you know, $200,000. We don't want to have any mistakes on that part. So that's a way you can, you know, express it to that person. And you also present in a way where they don't have a choice. You're not saying, can I take a statement? You're going to tell them, we're going to, you know, take a statement. You know, we're just going to write this down. And you don't even have to use the word statement because it sounds very official. Okay, we're just going to jot some of this down just to make sure it's all accurate information. And that's it. And you go from there. But if you give them a choice, you're sabotaging yourself.
To get something down on paper, what are a couple of different ways that you can go about it?
So there's a lot of different thoughts on that. One of the best ways would be to have that person write the statement in their own handwriting, but for you to dictate what they should write. I personally like this because, one, you're getting them to write it. It's in their own handwriting. So that means that they took time and they wrote it and it's in their own handwriting, and that you're also telling them what to write, in that if you allow somebody to write on their own, they're going to start kind of getting sidetracked. They're going to write what they want. They may decide to leave out some of the things they told you. And then it gets complicated if you just let them freelance it and free write it on their own. Don't let them do that, because you know what you need. You know you need them to write, I committed X amount of fraud, X amount of dollars on this date, this many times. So then you can dictate to them. Be like, okay, this is what you should write. And again, when you say it, it's not a big deal. You use soft words. You don't use words like steal, lie, you know, embezzle, fraud. You don't use those words. You say, okay, my name is, you know, Evie Pomperis. I'm writing this date. You know, I'm writing this out of my own, you know, on my own. This is voluntary on such and such date. Just get straight to the facts. On this date, I took X amount of dollars. I did this many times. This person helped me. This is how I did it. You know, write those things out. Avoid the strong words, and then at the end, you know, have them write, you know, I know this was wrong, you know, I feel bad about it, I want to try to make things right and pay back restitution, and I'm willing to cooperate. So now you have your facts, and then at the bottom you have intent, and you have that person acknowledging that what they did was wrong, and that's important. So that's the one aspect of it. But now look, if you write it yourself, that's fine too, but you always risk, you know, a lawyer or later on somebody saying, well, you wrote the statement, they didn't write it. That's okay. You can have them write it. They can sign it. Again, if you're just, you know, have somebody else witness. But these are always things that you risk when you do these interviews. Somebody can come back and say something different. But I definitely would not let the person write it on their own, because they're going to ramble and just kind of write whatever they feel like writing.
And you mentioned something in class today that I thought was a good idea. If you write the statement out set up a recorder and have them read the statement aloud and you record it while they read it.
Yes, so you can do that absolutely. So if they write it, actually you should do this no matter what, but if they write it and then you say, okay, read this out loud for me, and if you record that, now you have that. You know, you hear the person reading the statement saying, okay, do you feel comfortable with that? Is that accurate? You know, anything else you want to add? No, this is correct. This is accurate. This is what we talked about. Now you have that person on tape consenting, and then they read through the whole thing. So they can't turn around and say, well, she wrote it, and I don't know what she wrote.
If someone does confess orally during the interview, there may be a temptation for some people like, okay, well, I have witnesses. We all heard it. That's all we need. And just let's go ahead and quit while we're ahead and let them go. Why would you, if someone was telling you that was their procedure, why would you tell them to try as best that they can to get a signed statement while they're there?
You know, it's interesting you say that. You just reminded me of an interview I had done on someone, and they gave up a lot of information, and then they thanked me and everything went well. And then after the interview was over, they made a phone call to the offices where I worked and said, look, you know, I feel uncomfortable. This, you know, I admitted to things that I shouldn't have. And the individual who interviewed me, being me, made me feel like I had to say these things. And, you know, none of the things I said were correct. So they went on and on about the verbal stuff. And so then I get a call from my supervisor saying, you know, hey, this person said that they kind of felt intimidated and they felt they had to say these things to you. And I said, you know, that's kind of interesting because they felt very good to write it all down in their own handwriting. Here you go. Here's all 2 pages. So what that person did initially was to try to discredit me through the verbal conversation. They had forgotten about the written statement. And so I used that written statement. I said, here it is in black and white. And we always hear that. I will need to see it in black and white. When you get a written statement, it's good, especially if you're by yourself in the interview room with that person, because now you're going to get into the he said, she said thing, and then you might be called out and it's questionable. But when you get it written down, you could say, look, not only do I know they said this, but they wrote this down, and guess what? It's in their handwriting.
Well, Evie, thank you for joining us. This has been very interesting. I've enjoyed it. And so do you have maybe one final comment for the listeners to, you know, if they remember nothing else, remember this.
You know, be professional. Be a professional in that room. Some of the people you speak to, they won't be professional. Most of them won't. And don't mimic their behavior and don't get pulled into that. You maintain above board, you be professional, and you treat people with dignity and respect. Regardless of what happens at that room, there's no reason to disrespect anybody or to not treat them with dignity. And that will go a long way for you. There are countless confessions that I've gotten. And then at the end, sometimes when I felt comfortable enough, I would ask the person, I would say, why did you tell me this? And often I would hear, because you were nice to me, because you treated me better than the other person treated me. And actually that reminds me of another interview I did with a young woman. And she was also involved in some type of fraud. And law enforcement had actually interviewed her multiple times. And she denied it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. So at this point, she was going to walk because they didn't have enough on her. And I was asked to go up there and speak to her, which I did. And in the end, she gave me everything. At the end of the interview, I asked her, I was like, can I ask you, why did you tell me all of this? And you didn't tell the other officers. She said, because you were nice to me, and they weren't. It's really as simple as that. Sometimes that will get you the confession, just the way you treat people alone.
That wraps up another episode of Fraud Talk. You can find more podcasts at acfe.com/podcast. Thanks for listening, and I will catch you next month.